At BIMTube, our mission is clear: to elevate your digital knowledge. We deep dive into exploring the value of digital and data with conversations that not only inspire, but also instigate better information management.
So thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark, for joining me on my, this is the first podcast. And as we discussed yesterday, so first of all, it's good to see you yesterday. The theme is around better information management, but basically digital transformation under a, maybe under a different name. And so I just thought, again, as we've already had a little discussion just about your background, sustainability and its relationship to information management, digital transformation, with, you know, all that kind of stuff, and how I think there's still a strong disconnect between some of the digital people and people in different sectors like asset management, construction, engineering, and you know, so some of the horizontal threads, I guess, around all of this are things like sustainability, which covers everything. So I thought, so first of all, if you don't mind, obviously I know you very well, but if you just introduce yourself, what your role is, and then just briefly how you got to do what you do, if you could just start with that. Thanks.
Yeah, blimey, right, okay. I'm glad we started with a smaller, simpler first question.
Sure. Hell yeah. Who are you?
I'm Mark Edwards. I'm currently head of sustainability at Gatwick Airport. So a bit of background, I'm a mechanical engineer by trade, and we met when we both worked on the Tube. So my background basically is infrastructure and the development of said infrastructure, maintenance, upgrading, big projects. And so for me, started as a mechanical engineer, but for every engineering project, you need materials, you need energy. So I sort of moved into the environmental sector through resource efficiency. So that's about using materials, water, energy more efficiently. And so, you know, a good engineering design, an elegant solution should be very material and resource efficient. And so for me, that's a nice overlap between engineering and sort of the environmental sector. And that led sort of then me into, you know, that then resource efficiency is now what is known as a component of circular economy. And there's also a link to carbon reduction in there, as in, you know, if you use less stuff, there must be a lower carbon impact, right? So that's how I kind of got into things. And so I've worked at not-for-profit organisations like the UK Green Building Council, and I've worked at various other kind of infrastructure clients as well. So TfL, as Heathrow, and now at Gatwick. So that's kind of, guess, a potted history of how I got here.
Great, thank you. And yes, I did make it explicit, but you did, that we've known each other for 15 years, I think I worked out through the
London. Oh, yeah, something like that.
Okay, it makes me feel old. That's probably why I didn't say that. Yeah, but we're still here, so that's good. So thank you. So I think I'll begin, again, it's trying to draw together in the background, you know, digital information management and these concepts, but focused on the topic, and the topic today is obviously sustainability. So I guess, in a nutshell, what is sustainability? Oh. How would I explain it to, I don't know, someone who didn't know? How would I summarize it?
Blimey. Well, I mean, you could go right back to the old Brundtland's definition, which is about, now I've set myself up to give a quotation, which I'm now going to get wrong. This is terrible, terrible thought.
You can quote the person, I guess, and then...
Yes,
look it up.
It's broadly around, you know, delivering for society's needs today without impeding future generations' ability to meet their own needs.
Right.
It is basically the Brundtland definition. But broadly, people might have heard of the three pillars of sustainability or triple bottom line. And what that's referring to is there's an environmental aspect. So, you know, don't do environmental harm. There's also a social aspect. So that's health and well-being, employment, you know, all the sort of social aspects. And then the third pillar is financial, really. And I guess this is coming from a kind of organizational perspective. And the idea of sustainability is you get all the three of those to work in harmony, really. And I guess kind of in some way, traditionally, it's been sort of based on the environmental pillar and about trying to do less harm. So as in be less bad. But I think in the past sort of decade or so, things have moved on. The social agenda has increased massively. And I think progressively there's a movement away from doing less harm to actually trying to do good. So obviously two sides of the same coin, but very different. If you see what I mean.
Yeah. So that is quite a, well, is it, I guess it's a continuum, isn't it? But potentially that is quite a different shift. In perspective. I mean, you could look at it either way. You could say when the net balance of good, however that's measured, starts tipping in one direction, and also people have to be proactive, I guess that's a key difference as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the most crucial things about sustainability is that it needs to be baked. It's part of everyone's role. If you do it well, you know, if we're talking in an organizational context, yeah. I would say, you know, pretty much, you know, every organization has some sort of environmental or sustainability type resource now. But it's not those people that will be making that organization more sustainable. It's not them just sitting there in a corner of the office. Oh, don't worry, we've got sustainability covered. Dave's doing it. Crack on. It's actually about being an agent of change and engaging with people, and as you said, working across the horizontal, and about embedding it into the business so that people understand what sustainability is and how it impacts their jobs. And, you know, having the processes as a business that actually means it's baked into what people do. So they don't necessarily have to think about, oh, what do I need to do for sustainability? Actually, the business processes are there, and the way it's been set up is like, oh, we are doing this in a sustainable fashion.
Yeah, that's really good. Talking about having it baked in, again, when we've talked before, I see it similar to digital or information management in, well, not the topic, but the way it could and should be pervasive, just like health and safety regulation is now part of your working practices. So I guess just before we go into more detail on sustainability and carbon and things like that, without naming any names necessarily, what challenges, just bringing it back to information management just briefly, have you seen throughout your career? So it could be right from the beginning.
Sustainability can cover so many discrete areas. And you kind of need to do a materiality. If you're starting from nothing, one of the first things you need to do is do a materiality assessment to understand what are the important aspects to focus on for your organization or your project or your context, right? Because they'll be different. So there is no one answer fits all, basically. But traditionally, the way that, you know, and in some ways, sustainability, and particularly kind of the environmental aspect, it comes back to the sort of the mantra of you can't manage what you don't measure. I mean, I know that sounds a bit trite, but it's true. We're talking about air quality. Well, okay, how do we make the air quality better? Well, first of all, we need to understand what the air quality is. So where are we measuring it? How are we measuring it? What's our baseline? And so for me, there is, you know, a fundamental step across sustainability that you kind of need to understand that base level performance. And sometimes people are very keen. It's great that people are keen to go to action and they want to do stuff. But actually, until you've got a baseline, how can you compare, you know, if we're going to do an initiative to make things better? Well, hold on. If we haven't got a baseline, how can we judge if our performance has got better? You know, so actually, if you depending on where you are, if you're just starting out, just getting that, establishing that baseline is a crucial first step. And sometimes people want to gloss over that. But I think that is absolutely crucial. And then I think just in terms of sort of the data collection stuff, my ethos has always been that you should try and use existing processes and sources of data wherever possible. So for example, you know, if we want to know about energy usage, right, and we want to understand the carbon, well, presumably the organization pays an electricity bill and finance deals with that. Well, on that bill will be the kilowatt hours. So let me know the kilowatt hours. And then there we go. That's where we start from. So I can use that existing information, but to do something else additionally. And for me, that is the way about how you start integrating it into the business. It's just going, oh, well, we've got that source of data. Great. I can use that for something else as well.
Let's take a quick break.
Do you need help where to start with BIM and the ISO 19650 series of standards? If so, then our partners BIM Enable can help. Not only do they provide training, they can also offer implementation services and a strategic overview for your organization with a roadmap of what to do. They specialize in information management of all kinds, and BIM is just part of this, but also asset information management. So why don't you go to bimenable.com? That's bimenable.com.
I guess what could you measure other than utility?
Again, it comes back to the issues around, you know, what aspects of sustainability are you looking at? So for example, there's always a compliance bit. So depending on what your business might be, you know, if you deal with waste, then you'll need to collect waste transfer notes and waste data. And then you can start looking there going, well, okay, where do we go from there? You know, you've got energy and utility, energy and water. Then you'll have a sort of compliance piece. So that might be around wastewater or air pollution. And so if it's compliance, you know, there'll be requirements that you have to meet. And then you can get into other sort of different areas around, you know, so actually, well, what about biodiversity? What are we doing there? How do you measure that? Things like, you know, if you flip resource and waste on its head and start looking at resources, kind of, well, okay, what materials are we buying and how are we using them? Where does that go? And so it all depends, you know, and then you get into the social aspect. It's kind of, oh, okay, well, how much are we spending in the local area? How many jobs are we supporting? Yeah. How many apprenticeships are we, you know, providing? All those sorts of things, you know, how do we measure health and well-being of the workforce? How, you know, what is the organization giving back to its local community? So there's so many different things that you could be looking at. But again, it's the understanding the data not only gives you the baseline, but it also helps you identify the hotspots of where to take action as well.
Yeah, that's really good. I guess the hotspot should be, again, without being too leading, should be aligned to things like, exactly like policies at a corporate level. I guess that's the trick, isn't it, to get aligned. So thank you. That was really good to get an idea of the kind of things that could be measured. And so sustainability, we know what that is. I guess I'd normally end with these kind of questions, but I think it might help us with our conversation to say, well, what are some of the key trends or topics that people, so again, maybe the audience is focused on data, digital, but, you know, where should people go to find more information, or what are the key trends and topics that you see at the moment to focus on? I mean, I'll just throw one out there. People often ask me about embedded carbon. You know, can we measure embedded carbon? So my answer is yes. Yeah. But, and then that segues into you saying, but, yeah, you know, who wants to know and how we would do it, is that's the tricky bit. So, I mean, maybe just start with that one. Embedded carbon, is that
so
at the moment still, you know?
I mean, well, I was going to start with carbon, basically.
Oh,
carbon,
okay, sorry.
I guess carbon is the, if you want, like the poster boy for sustainability at the moment, because, you know, it's certainly in an infrastructure and a built environment world, you know. People might be aware of, you know, all the scrutiny that big infrastructure projects are being put on. It's all through a carbon lens. So carbon is very much of the moment. Obviously, it's absolutely crucial. But it's really important that people need to understand that carbon is not a synonym for sustainability. There's so much more to sustainability than carbon. Carbon is just an aspect of sustainability, and you can't measure your sustainable performance by reducing it down to a single tons of carbon dioxide equivalent metric, right? It's just a part of it.
Yeah.
However, nevertheless, it is really important. There is so much focus on that. So to coming back to sort of, I would call it embodied carbon or capital carbon in an infrastructure sense. So can we measure it? 100% yes. If you have a construction project and you have a bill of quantities, which presumably you have because you have a cost estimate, you can measure the carbon. It is as simple as that. Essentially, you know, instead of using cost rates, you know, pounds per meter square of wall, I then can give you tons of carbon per meter square of wall.
Yeah.
So all you need is that carbon factor, which are available. So there are, and it basically works the same as accounting. Instead of using money, we're using tons of carbon. And
just to interject, who would have that figure? So would you? But you could calculate it, but the supplier would give you that multiplication factor. Is that right?
So well, there's different sources for what we would call that carbon factor. So there are industry level factors, which are really generic. So it'd be like, here's an average carbon factor for a brick, for example, and it would just be like a complete average. But an individual supplier should be able to tell you the specific carbon impact of their particular brick that they manufacture, right? And it depends how much level of detail you want to go down into it. And obviously, the more detail you go, then it will reduce your error bars. But equally, for a construction project, your error bars at concept design will be far greater than as built, because at concept design, you're guessing what you're going to build, whereas, you know, we think there's going to be a wall that's 10 meters squared and 10 of these bricks in. But by the time
exactly the same as costing, potentially.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. So you might have to have estimates, but ideally you don't. But okay, just to add, okay, yeah, makes perfect sense to me. Yeah.
Fascinatingly, so, you know, if you think of who does the cost estimating, well, quantity surveyors. So you, RICS, the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, actually have a professional statement as to how to measure embodied carbon. So any chartered quantity surveyor or chartered through RICS should be aware of that and should be able to do the calculations.
Right. Maybe I'll put a link to that.
Yeah, I can give you that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, fine. Good. So survey is good. And this is where... I think, sorry, because there's probably more for you to say, but just to add, this is where the intrinsic link between data, information, measurements, metric, without me, you know, pushing you into that theme, that naturally comes up to professionals, and then people who manage the data, which isn't maybe necessarily the most glamorous bit, but obviously that's a large part of my background, is where is that data held? How do we visualize the data? How is it stored? You know, that side of it has to be done somewhere. Yeah.
But you probably won't like this, but really crudely, you know, if we're talking about measuring the embodied carbon on a construction project, it is as simple as basically adding another column into a spreadsheet. So you've got your costings, and now we just put carbon in there. So we've got the carbon factor, or maybe it's two columns, one for the carbon factor and then one for the results of the multiplication. And that's it. I am probably grossly simplifying,
but
pretty much that is it. So it can definitely be done. And, you know, and I what I would like to see, and I think what some organizations are doing, is that when they are making business decisions, they are getting to the point where they are looking at options, and not only are they looking at the cost, but at the same time, they are looking at the carbon. That is when sustainability and carbon reduction has been truly baked in. And the important thing there is the decision makers actually need to be educated and have the awareness and the understanding of what these numbers mean. And then we get into a kind of whole life carbon assessment and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, from a data point of view, it is relatively straightforward. But there is that complete overlap.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I've been asked, could you put it in, for example, a, you know, BIM as in a 3D model? Absolutely, I would imagine. But yeah, but then we need the skills that you're talking about to make sure it flows, and then what it means, and then that there's the governance in place to mandate it in the first place that you get it. Yeah.
If I go back to my BIM days, I think there's a data schema that underpins BIM, and I can't remember what it's called.
IFC, Uniclass, COBE.
COBE, that's the one I was thinking of.
So I can talk at length about, well, I won't. This is, well, you know, I can. Anyway, so yes, absolutely, COBE. Yeah. And that is still, so sorry, Mike, because I don't know how close you are to it now, but that's still preferred by the UK government as a data exchange mechanism.
So as I understand it, the COBE schema has placeholders for carbon data. So absolutely. So what I would love to see, for me, I mean, we're almost getting to the utopia already, but what I would like to see, you know, so if we're going from, if we're talking about a piece of infrastructure and we're building something that's going to be part of an infrastructure system. So for me, you start off in BIM, you put your carbon and all your other environmental metrics into there, and it shows up on the BIM during the design stages. Then when it's built, it all gets updated from estimates to as built. And then you go from BIM into your asset management system.
Yeah.
And then you go through the maintenance process, and it's kind of, oh, it's all there and you can see it. And then you can bring in your energy meters into the asset management system. And it just, I mean, that would be perfect. If you could do that, that gives you the whole life, and that would be amazing.
Yes. And so of course that ability is still there. And of course the language is slightly shift, well, for some people we're starting to talk more about digital twins, but that's just one of the outputs of the mechanism. But anyway, things are gathering momentum. I think that's the key point. So there was carbon. So apology, I think, because I said what were the three sort of things that we could look at. One was carbon. So, and then thankfully you've mentioned RICS as well, so I can put a link to that. So that's very good. What other, can't remember what my specific question was now. Aspects.
Well, so
we can measure. Yeah, so that broadly, was the question.
Yeah, broadly, without as I said earlier, without knowing the context for everything, I think, given the wider context and what's going on in the world today, I think kind of energy, and there is also obviously a link to carbon, a direct link through energy to carbon. But I think energy data is, you know, really of the moment, and you know, where are you getting your energy from? You know, are you burning fossil fuels? Are you electrifying? Where are you getting that electricity from? Can you generate on site? All of this sort of stuff. That is very much, because I think this is where the commercial realities of the world are going right now. And people are kind of go, well, hold on, my electricity bill is going up. Going up, what can I do about that?
Yeah.
So I think energy, and but obviously there is a really close correlation between carbon and energy, in that, you know, there is a direct link. So it's kind of, you know, two sides of the same coin. So that's one. And I think probably, you know, I think resources is a good place to start for any organization. You know, so looking at water and then looking at either materials that you use or waste that you generate. Because I think the things there that is good for a business, and that's an important place to, a good place to start, is, well, if you use less water, it will cost you less in the long run. So that's just good business sense, right?
Yeah.
And similarly, you know, if you're generating less waste, then would you have to pay for that waste to be dealt with? You're being more efficient. So that, again, that's just good business sense.
You mentioned waste. Maybe just briefly mention, zero net to landfill as well. Maybe either that project or specifically, or is that a concept that's caught momentum? I can't say I've heard it many other times outside of where we used to work, but I have heard it once or twice.
So it's interesting. And this is, I guess, my one of the things that I'm really interested in. I think over the past few years, things have moved on. So it used to be about waste and waste minimization, because if I generate waste, I then have to pay for that waste to be dealt with. So if I can reduce the amount of waste that I create, I then have to spend less money dealing with it. It just makes sense, right? So that makes sense. So then you start looking and going, well, hold on. Maybe waste, and this is you might like this, I might get this quotation wrong, but maybe waste are just resources that don't have data associated with them. Maybe that's a way, one way of looking at waste. It's just,
or don't have an owner.
Yeah. Maybe
like
we have
orphaned resources, something like that.
So then you start looking at, well, hold on, am I resource efficient? Am I, you know, so if you look at the, instead of looking at the what I would call the end of pipe solutions, so we do a thing and we generate waste. Oh, and then we need to do something with that waste. So that's kind of like an end of pipe. So hold on. Can I do something to stop generating waste in the first place? So can I use my resources more efficiently? So that's what, one way of looking at it. And then that has become, over the probably last decade or so, that has become turned into looking at the circular economy. And that's been through a great deal of work through the Ellen MacArthur Foundation.
Right.
And that is looking at things more actually in the round and looking at resources. So if I've got a resource, how can I use it at its highest value for as long as possible? Because that's making the most out of those resources. And that really, to truly embrace the circular economy, actually requires a paradigm shift across the whole economy, because you can't do circular economy on your own. And it means changing what is regarded now as normal business practices. So business practices now are, you know, are kind of very linear, sort of take, make, and destroy, basically, or waste. So it's very linear. But actually what you want to do is you want to take stuff out of the ground, or, you know, wherever it's come from, and then use it and reuse it and reuse it and reuse it and reuse it until you can't use it anymore. And then
until your finger hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you want to know, can I re-engineer this or remanufacture it or refurbish it and give it a second life? And then only when you've got to that end, it's kind of, oh, okay, maybe I need to take this apart and recycle it. Okay, can I do that? So you're trying to use these resources for as long as possible. And so it becomes circular in nature. But that is very much different to the traditional Western linear approach.
Is it so? So that is interesting talking about that, because often in my work, which is, people that don't know, is sort of about business process change, and digital is obviously part of that. It's often looking, what I often look for is the incentive for people, consequences and incentives. Yeah. So, for example, in you said it involves many people, right? Many stakeholders. Yeah. And you think that's the singular challenge, isn't it? Because efficiency and reuse of materials maybe isn't incentive. Well, I'm saying maybe, most likely, there isn't an incentive for people at the moment necessarily, or it's not clear. Let's put it that way. So you've got things like ESG coming, you know, that we have. I think historically that's been the challenge, hasn't it? Where's the incentive for people to change? Historically, yeah. There hasn't been one, or it's been unclear at best, but that's sort of changing now, would you say, or at least with things like ESG focus? Or
So I think in the past 2 or 3 years there has been a seismic shift which has really brought sustainability to the fore, and I think that basically comes from Mark Carney, and the former governor of the Bank of England, who did something called TCFD, the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. So basically, he brought climate change into the financial sphere. And this task force basically asked the question, well, why does the finance industry care about climate change and carbon? Right? Again, we're talking about the poster boy, carbon, right?
Yeah.
But this has now stuck. And this is why there's now traction. Because the finance industry is now gets sustainability more than it has ever done before. And so there are things like green financing, where, you know, actually, you know, before, you know, if you could demonstrate your sustainability performance, you might have had a preferential interest rate or something like that. But what has changed now, I think, is that sustainability performance, in particular carbon, has now become a gateway into getting finance, full stop. So if you're not sustainable, actually you can't even access that finance. So and that for me is an absolute game changer, because, you know, if we're living in a capitalist society, and, you know, money and finance is the oil of the that greases the machinery of everything. Well, all of a sudden, the people at the very top that control the taps are now interested in this agenda.
And I think that's really interesting because ultimately, in that scenario, it comes down to a financial link. Because of course, looking at triple bottom line, we're saying, oh, it's not all about money. But now, in some way, rightly or wrongly, actually, it's linking the others to financial incentives. Maybe indirectly or directly. And I was just thinking about that. You're talking about money and unlocking finance because of perhaps ESG type credentials. I'm just thinking at a strategic government level or intra-governmental or inter-governmental level, it might be that we don't want to finance, so there'd still be a conflict. So for example, there would be an entity that wants to build infrastructure. That's what they do. So they want to build infrastructure. We love building or buildings. We love building buildings. But then I'm always interested in the question of, well, do we need to do, should we be doing it? And it still depends who you ask. Do you see what I mean? So it might be that we're very sustainably and very efficiently building new, whatever, I won't even name the infrastructure, X type of infrastructures. But the question beyond that is, should we be, do we need them? Yeah. Do you mean, I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, I always see that as a little bit of a dilemma, certainly because I work quite a lot with people in the construction sector. I'm often thinking, well, should we, do we need more skyscrapers? I mean, I don't know. I mean, have you got anything to say about that, about the philosophical question of do we need the infrastructure?
So this comes down to there's a unique thing about infrastructure compared to other type of built assets, in that infrastructure is required to fulfill societal needs. People want clean water to drink. They want their wastewater taken away. Yeah. People want energy. People want to be able to transport themselves and their goods to places. So infrastructure is all about fulfilling societal needs. So society has deemed that infrastructure is required. So for me, that's very different to, should we build that new 20-story steel and glass tower in the middle of London? Because is that a societal need? You know, that there's a different look on that. And so that for me is what makes the infrastructure lens on this very different. And because of that, infrastructure is there to meet a need which society has declared. So from that standpoint, I think the onus is on infrastructure to be delivered in a sustainable way as possible. So coming right back to what I said at the start, maybe it is actually about doing less bad. Because if we decide actually we need to do a thing, we need to, put these new sewers in. We need to put these new, provide electricity to this new town. Okay, we need to do that. So that needs to happen. There will be impacts from doing that thing. But how can we reduce those impacts to the bare minimum? And that for me is what makes infrastructure so fascinating and what makes it different to other types of built assets.
There's an opportunity here. We sort of could ride a wave of an initiative. What should people look at? Where could they improve?
So I think the way, rather than looking at a specific aspect of sustainability, I think I can answer that in the round. Yeah. And this goes back to what we were saying earlier about sustainability being part of everyone's day job, right? So for me, it's about giving people access to the metrics and the data so that they can see how their actions make a tangible difference. So let's take, for example, I'm trying to think of something. Let's take a cleaner, right? So if they know, segregated waste, they're cleaning up and they segregate the waste and they know it goes off to recycling. If they can then have access to, this is the monthly metrics of the different amounts of paper and plastic and metal and different types of things that have gone off for recycling, then they potentially can see the impact that they're having because of those metrics, you see. And then equally, that then can be used by other people around to see, you know, well, how is the organization performing? So I think it's about giving people access to metrics where they can see the impact of the things that they do. Yeah.
Others do talk about whole life costings, but it's a challenge when it's the structural, it's the organization of organizational challenges, let's put it that way, about funding streams. I don't know if you've come across this often, but that's the challenge. People have different pots of money, and it's as simple as that when push comes to shove. I mean, it goes on.
Let's take a quick break. Don't forget, you can catch up on all our podcasts in video and audio by visiting our website at bim.tube. That's bim.tube.
Yeah, well, I agree, you know, and it depends. Each organization will be set up differently about how they, you know, capitalize things or whether it's operational and that sort of stuff. So, you know, it depends on, it does depend on the organization. But I think an ethos that I've had that sort of has underpinned everything I've done from an environmental point of view has been that my view is the worst case should be things are cost neutral in that, you know, really, more often than not, you know, especially around the world of resource efficiencies, if you're buying fewer materials, using less energy and less water, it's got to cost less, right? Because you're buying less stuff. So from that, you know, from that perspective, really, if you do an intervention, then worst case should be that it's cost neutral, as in it costs the same as what we used to spend, but actually we're getting better outcomes. We're doing things in a better way. And I would suggest more often or not, actually, if these things are embraced in an effective manner and implemented in an effective manner, things pretty much end up saving you money.
Yeah. And with different ways of working as well, which is a topic we've not even sort of come on to in the sense of sort of literal external innovation, which will have an impact and obviously is having an impact. And that's a parallel thread, but, you know, about how the way in which we perform construction, for example, the way, you know, the efficiencies that could be made through different working practices and modern methods of construction and all the rest of it, then that might move the goalposts, as it were, to what decision you're going to make, what material type, you know, can things be partly prefabricated offsite and all the rest of it, or 3D printed? Yeah.
But that's an interesting thing you make about MMC in that, you know, it's often done for productivity, cost reasons, but actually you end up with good, more often than not, good sustainability outcomes as well. But it's just not, that's not the main driver. Well, okay, it doesn't really matter because we're still getting a good outcome. So, you know, sometimes cost and particularly carbon are two sides of exactly the same coin. And I think maybe what happens, particularly in MMC, is that those sort of, you know, the sustainability impacts just haven't been quantified. And actually, you do achieve those better outcomes. It's just that people are not motivated primarily.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And again, when we were talking yesterday, it's about a story, isn't it, or the narrative. So that's a good example. I know it's a specific one, but I often think that, well, probably every day of my working career is what is the narrative, or what is the, I don't want to say spin, but let's say what is the focus of this in the specific example we're talking about, but it might be something else. And clearly it's going to be different for different people. Yeah. And then that's why I find it absolutely fascinating where that's a different skill, right? So we're, you know, I'm sort of half an engineer, you are an engineer, and we work with people in engineering, construction and AEC. Often I think what we need sometimes is people with marketing skills or storytelling. And I'm quite serious about that sometimes. I'll write copy and I think, is that meaningful to a non-specialist, you know, outside of a specific engineering domain and maybe a technology domain? And I'll often get things proofread. I don't know if you've got any thoughts about sort of internal. I know we're changing topic here, but I always say, well, have you got an internal comms team? You know, could they re? Sorry, go ahead. If you've got
I was just going to agree with it. Yeah. Is that in for me? I would suggest that for any successful sustainability professional, they are simply a great facilitator. They can talk to people that work in different disciplines in their own language to get to more sustainable outcomes. So if you're talking to finance people, you need to talk about finance. If you're talking to an operational guy, you need to talk about, well, hold on, this will make your system more resilient. This will reduce the amount of maintenance you need to do. You know, so it's about talking to different professionals in their own language and the benefits that a more sustainable approach can bring to them. Like you were saying earlier, you know, why do people want to, people don't want change. And as soon as there is some sort of change in the offering, the first question is, well, what's in it for me? So if you can understand that and say, well, actually, if we do this thing slightly differently, your life will be made easier like this, then that's a great way to get them to change. But and to do that, I completely agree with you that to effectively embed sustainability and improve things, a sustainability person fundamentally needs to be able to communicate with different professionals and tie into those different functions. So, yeah, I agree. It's absolutely crucial for sustainability.
Yeah, and again, I often think about the jargon of the language. I know not to labour this point, but often it can be as simple as a word. I'm not belittling the skill in what we need and the storytelling that we're talking about. But often I'll say, well, is that the right word? You know, without getting too much into semantics of we call it this asset, for example, you call it X, I call it Y. That can be almost a deal breaker in the sense of people's understanding or people buying into it. So yeah, I'll often spend a lot of time with that does tie in. I didn't set it up like that, but that does tie into things like information and BIM or exchange of information and things like this, because the semantics, and clearly there's a lot of work going on around that, what we call things and what things mean becomes absolutely critical. But a lot of people who talk about it only mean on a technical data exchange level, whereas I'm always interested on the other level about the point you made about how will that help me make a story, which seems obvious, but the language is absolutely critical. So maybe there could be templates. I mean, we're reaching the end of the time here, but just to say, what are the industry bodies? So particularly for sustainability, what are sort of the main industry bodies or groups that if people wanted to learn more, where would they go? Or what are the ones that you're affiliated with or maybe on some groups that external websites?
So there's a couple immediately spring to mind, which would be IEMA, which is the Institute of Environmental Management and Assessment. And then you've got CIWEM, which is the Chartered Institute of Waste Management. And then I can't think of its proper name, but there is an Institute of Sustainability.
I can put a link in it.
Yeah. But equally, I would suggest that most professional bodies, learned societies, will probably have some sort of subcommittee dedicated to sustainability. So, for example, I'm a member of the Institute of Mechanical Engineers, and there's an environmental steering group that sits. There are similar groups in the ICE, RICS, that sort of stuff. So I think, as a first point of call, if people are interested, is to look at their own professional bodies and see what groups already exist within that structure. Because what we were just saying about comms, that then enables people to talk in their own language about their own professions. What are the sustainability things in my profession? What am I interested in?
So, so I think that's really helpful. And again, I think that language is the absolutely key thing. And internationally, how have you had any sort of direct sort of links with UN Sustainability Development Goals, or are they mentioned in your place of work or in others?
Oh, cripes. I was going to say, the other one that I should have mentioned was the Society for the Environment. That's probably a good one. So UN SDGs. Wow, that's a question. This is where we get into the thorny topic of how do big international global political goals like that feed down into organizational objectives? And that's a fascinating. So I think by and large, most big companies will make a link between what they do and how they're supporting the SDGs. But I mean, I would suggest that really the SDGs and achieving those are not really a kind of a fundamental, you know, earlier we were talking about incentives. I mean, it would seem to me that they're not that sort of fundamental driver. I think they're sort of, and again, obviously my view is pillared by, you know, what I've worked in and worked with, but there doesn't seem to be, you know, oh, let's go and achieve SDG 12, isn't kind of, you know, such a massive motivating force. It's more kind of, oh, we're doing this thing. Oh, and also that supports this SDG as well. So it's kind of like a co-benefit as opposed to the underpinning driver, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really good, because again, there's alignment. So certainly some of the activity around digital twins with the UK government then have them aligned up, you know, as an ultimate outcome. So I think that's one way of looking at it. I think maybe at a corporate level, referring to them and aligning with them makes sense at a government level, because that's obviously who they are. But yeah, so I mean, I could talk all day. I've probably taken your time. I think just one thing to ask you, is there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't actually ask you? Any particular topic? Putting you on the spot here, sustainability, it doesn't have to be necessarily loaded with digital, but any particular use of technology that you've seen, you think, wow, that's good, or any examples like that, or just anything inspiring, I guess, is what you know.
From that, wow. Okay.
Well, I think I've asked you many questions. What would you like to add?
I'm glad you keep them so, you know, not broad at all, very specific. The thing is, sustainability covers such a broad church of things. It's quite difficult. But I think what's interesting is, fundamentally, the gathering of data and the access to data, it comes back to what I said right at the start, is about enables you to manage and deliver sustainability improvements. And it underpins basically everything. And so from that point of view, you know, all the advances there are, so, you know, things like, you know, you can get these dashboards and, that really bring these metrics to life. And I think maybe this is a bit of the engineer in me, is that, you know, if I've got the metrics, well, I've got a starting point. I know where I can go from here. And if I do something, I can measure my impact and I can see what difference it's made or not, as the case may be. And also, if I've got the metrics and the data, it shows me where I should be focusing my efforts, because I can do my Pareto analysis. Well, bang, okay, this bit is causing me the most harm. Right, I'm going to do something about it. Right, crack on. And then that allows you then to have those discussions with the senior leaders and set that sort of, you know, organizational strategy. Well, we're going to do this. Well, why? Well, because look at this data. It's saying over here is where we've got the problem, so we're going to go and do something. Or it might be, you know, over here there's an opportunity to go and do something, so go and let's maximize that. So I think, you know, all the advances in, you know, in digital, in terms of you know, mobile access, I think they all help the agenda. So I don't think there's maybe one thing, but I think they, you know, the ability to manage and access data certainly has helped the sustainability agenda no end.
Yeah, and the traceability, and I like when you say about measure and the data. Measure the impact, which might be self-evident, and we've sort of already mentioned that maybe that doesn't happen. Again, I was just thinking of sort of not sort of rhetoric in the more Greek sense of sort of logos, ethos, you know. So basically we were talking about story, make a good story and tell it, and now we're talking about sort of the logos, you know, the measurement. You need all of these elements to, it's like a rounded story, isn't it? These are the impacts, and I think that pulls it all together for the right audience. So
I would describe that as it's hearts and minds. The hearts is the story and the minds is the data.
Like it. That's more pithy, rather than me talking about Greek ancient Greek rhetoric theory. Hearts and minds. All right, I'll make a note of that. Right. So I could talk all day, but thanks so much, Mark Edwards, and for your time.
having me.
A pleasure, as always. Thank you. And any of the websites you mentioned, I'll put a link down when this goes live. But yeah, thanks so much for your time. It was good to see you yesterday as well. And that's it. If anyone else wants to speak to Mark, I'm sure he, through LinkedIn or something, would be willing to answer questions at a small fee or not. But thanks very much. I'll formally close the podcast there. So thanks very much, Mark. Thank you.